From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
Yes and no. But for one thing, many of the World War II individuals and also families, they're very close-knit. So what I had to do was basically introduce myself and then also talk about what the nature of my work was all about. And then I also had to relay my own family history. Like, they would ask me this when I first met them and say, where's your family from? That was the first question for most of them. What was, you know, where was my family from? And also, what did your grandfather and what did your father do? That was really the way that we broke the ice on having any kind of conversation about the war altogether.
Dr. Robert F. Jefferson, Jr., Associate Professor of History at the University of New Mexico, and author of Brothers in Valor, Battlefield Stories of the 89 African Americans Awarded the Medal of Honor, published by Lions Press. Since the Civil War, African American soldiers have been serving this country with distinction. Brothers in Valor is a history lesson on the 89 African American soldiers who were awarded the nation's highest military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. The history lesson covers those courageous servicemen from the Civil War to the Vietnam Theater. Jefferson paints a vivid picture of African American soldiers who carry the flag of freedom, but had to face the fight to be recognized as patriots, heroes, and leaders. I'm Johnny O'Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Brothers in Valor, Battlefield Stories of the 89 African Americans Awarded the Medal of Honor, with Dr. Robert F. Jefferson, In Black America.
Well, this book largely grew out of my first book because I had questions about how the public saw African-American soldiers during the Second World War, and also how did they perceive their conduct in the face of battle. For me, I really struggled trying to answer that question, and I also wanted to see if there were any kind of historical undercurrents to that question. So that led me to thinking about, okay, all of these men who have been recognized for these acts of gallantry in the face of battle, and also what did they think about notions like and also definitions of courage and things like that. Our community is very steep. I think it's steep in applying conduct to basically rights. And I think that's something that they carried forward from basically the Civil War, even down through the present day that we live right now.
Dr. Robert F. Jefferson, Jr. has long been interested in African Americans' involvement with military service. His previous books focused on the relationship between African-American GIs and their communities during World War II, and Fighting for Hope, African-American Troops and the 93rd Infantry Division in World War II and Post-War America. In his latest book, Brothers in Valor, Jefferson presents the 89 African-Americans who were awarded the Medal of Honor. Consider this. These African-American soldiers march forward. When all odds were against them, both on the battlefield and off, they reshaped the very definition of courage under fire during some of the most harrowing moments in U.S. military history. The heroes Jefferson writes about in this book faced certain death with nerves of steel without flinching. In turn, their courage and determination left an indelible mark on the American landscape. Recently, In Black America spoke with Jefferson.
Well, I was born in Darlington, South Carolina. My family moved from there to Norfolk, Virginia, where basically I grew up. I spent my formative years and went to school at the University of Michigan at graduate school. But before that, I basically went to school at Elon College in North Carolina. So I've been pretty much all over the place, I think.
Any brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I got two brothers, and I got four sisters.
So I guess at home growing up, it was never a dull moment.
No, it wasn't. You can ask my mom about that. Every time she walked in the door, it was always something.
What were some of your favorite subjects while you were matriculating to high school?
For me, my favorite subject was it was actually political science. I had a high school teacher who. He had a way of basically bringing government to life for us, and that's what really got me interested in teaching, because he would come into the classroom and you didn't know, you didn't know what to be prepared for. He asked you to just bring your brain with you, and that's it.
And what led you to major in history?
Well, my father, he taught African history in South Carolina. He was actually a master school teacher in South Carolina, and he was also somebody who had a tendency to captivate students. He would take me to his classes when I was growing up, and I'd sit in the back of the room and I'd just watch how students basically hung on his every word as he was talking. I mean, for a kid growing up, you know, you think your parents what they're doing is not really extraordinary, but as the years went by, I realized that he was doing something phenomenal in the classroom, and I wanted a piece of that.
What led you to Wayne State University?
Wayne State University. I was actually hired there by someone. I was recruited to go there by someone who actually was the subject of my first book, mm-hmm. Fighting for Hope, African American Troops of the 93rd Infantry Division in World War II and post-war America.
Right.
I met him for the first time, and he said, "You know what? We're going to try to see if we can get you to come here." And at that time, when I was in graduate school, I thought he was just pulling my leg. But soon enough, like a couple years later, he came to me and said, "You know what? We want you to come and do a job talk." So I did that, and that's how my Wayne State experience started. Wayne State was a great place to be, by the way.
How long did you stay at Wayne State?
I stayed there for 3 years.
The reason I asked that question is because I'm from Detroit. So how did you like living in Detroit?
Oh, it was great. The one thing about Wayne State is that you get non-traditional students coming into your classes, and
right.
the stories they told about, you know, what life was like in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, it was almost like a history lesson every time that I stepped into the classroom with them. And I learned just as much from them as they learned from me. I learned what cities like Detroit, what makes them tick.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was a phenomenal experience.
What led you to the University of New Mexico?
Wow. I came here as a result of I applied for the job here as the director of the Africana Studies mm-hmm. program. The thing is, I didn't know anything about New Mexico. I didn't know anything about the Southwest when I first got here.
I got you.
And I found that I was learning on the fly as I got here. I mean, for one thing, I fell in love with the Southwest. I love being here. And I also like the University of New Mexico because the student body here is quite unique. The things that I teach in the classroom, they have a way of taking the things that we talk about during our discussions, and then they go home and I see they're having these discussions when they go home go to their dorms, and then they come back and they have these really interesting questions about what life was like during a given period and so forth, and then they also apply it to their own lived experiences. I think that in itself is really fascinating.
Have you grown to appreciate the Indian culture that's in New Mexico?
Oh, yes, I have. My wife and I, every chance we get, we try to go and do these field trips around the state here
mm-hmm.
to see the landscape, and then also to try to imagine what it was like to live here at the
right.
turn of the century, you know?
Mm-hmm. Obviously, this book that you've written is not the first book on military. What initially sparked that interest in African Americans in the military?
Well, my grandfather served in World War II,
okay.
and when I was growing up, he used to tell me stories about what it was like to be in the segregated army in the 1940s. And the way he talked about it was, it always came back to, I think, community and also family, because for him it was really important. For him, he was one of the first people to basically leave home in my family. So when he was talking about these things, I became fascinated in what military life meant for basically the collective whole, for
mm-hmm.
African Americans as
mm-hmm.
a whole, and that's what led me to writing my first book.
Was it difficult in researching this particular subject?
Yes and no. For one thing, many of the World War II individuals and also families, they're very close-knit. So what I had to do was basically introduce myself and then also talk about what the nature of my work was all about. And then I also had to relay my own family history. Like, they would ask me this when I first met them and say, where's your family from? That was the first question from most of them. Where was my family from? And also, what did your grandfather and what did your father do? That was really the way that we broke the ice on having any kind of conversation about the war altogether.
I understand. We'll be back with more In Black America after this message. If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O. Henson, Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio. We're speaking with Dr. Robert F. Jefferson, Jr., Associate Professor in the Department of History at the University of New Mexico and author of Brothers in Valor, Battlefield Stories of the 89 African Americans Awarded the Medal of Honor. Dr. Jefferson, what led you to write this particular book?
Well, this book largely grew out of my first book because I had questions about it. I had questions about how the public saw African American soldiers during the Second World War, and also how did they perceive their conduct in the face of battle. Mm-hmm. For me, I really struggled trying to answer that question, and I also wanted to see if there were any kind of historical undercurrents to that question. So that led me to thinking about, okay, all of these men who have been recognized for these acts of gallantry in the face of battle, and also what did they think about notions like and also definitions of courage and things like that. Our community is very steep. I think it's steep in applying conduct to basically rights, and I think that's something that they carried forward from basically the Civil War, even down through the present day that we live right now.
I found it interesting, which was a history lesson for myself, is that prior to it actually being named, as we know it today, the Medal of Honor, it was called something else. Can you take us through that progression?
Yeah, it was for many of those who, first of all, it did not get the designation of the Medal of Honor until the Civil War. Right. It was something that was, it was thought about during the American Revolutionary War. The Continental Congress, in fact, was trying to figure out ways in which to strike special medals for acts of gallantry for basically their generals, people like George Washington and Horatio Gates and also Daniel Morgan and others. But then later on, they started thinking about, okay, what about basically the foot soldiers who basically stand in the ranks? So they started, they looked, by the time the Mexican-American War rolled around, they started thinking about how could they basically acknowledge everyday soldiers for the things that they were doing in the face of fierce fighting. So by the Civil War, the whole notion of what honor meant and what courage meant was then codified, I think, And Abraham Lincoln said that he wanted to do something else with that. So that's how the Medal of Honor came into being.
When you sat down to write this particular work, were there any particular avenues you definitely wanted to pursue?
Oh, yes. I wanted to look at, for me, I wanted to understand two periods, the World War II period and the Vietnam War period. Okay. And the reason why is because it was personal. For me, and as I said before, my grandfather served in the Second World War, but I also had some uncles who served in the Vietnam War, and the stories they told were quite different. They were strikingly different from what my grandfather talked about. And I wanted to understand, so how did these ideas about basically gallantry, courage, honor, how did they change over a 20-year period? I mean, the way my uncles talked about it, it was about saving lives, and mm-hmm. it was about basically being able to come home in one piece and have their brothers who were fighting next to them come home in one piece. For my grandfather, they were basically fighting for something much more than that. So I wanted to understand that. There's a continuum there that I think we really ought to pay attention to when we start thinking about basically African-Americans serving in overseas operations.
Tell us about the first recipient of the Medal of Honor, William H. Kearny.
Kearny was somebody who fascinated me from the very beginning because he was somebody who was he was very outspoken about the Civil War, what it was all about. He knew from the very beginning, he and those who basically went in from the very beginning, they knew that they were fighting for much more than just They were fighting for much more than just themselves. They were fighting for their communities. They were fighting for. They were just basically fighting for freedom. And with that, they say if they couldn't be free and if they couldn't secure their own freedom, then they couldn't make a claim for anybody else to be free. So Carney and I really make a point of this in that opening chapter. They saw the flag as basically encompassing all of those things, and it conjured up all of those ideas that they had about being free. So, and he is somebody who was very selfless. He was a he was an eloquent orator. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could talk about what these ideas meant for him, and he was also somebody who could convey that to the people who served next to him. He was a phenomenal figure, but if you remember, he does not basically be recognized as the first recipient until years later, and I think that tells us something about where the country was going at that time.
Four decades. You're talking about years. We're talking about four decades here.
That's right. That's right. And you know, actually, I had a conversation with somebody here today, and we were talking about, okay, so we have these 89 individuals who are recognized for the acts of gallantry. Where are the modern-day heroes? And I said, you know what? This is a part of a historical trend that we're living through. And I think this happens when it comes down to thinking about what the meaning of courage is and what gallantry means. I think the country constantly has to basically revisit that every time a person puts their lives on the line for something larger than themselves.
I found it fascinating that these individuals went into war and they were not treated the same way as their white counterparts.
They were not. They were actually fighting a war within a war.
Exactly.
They found that not only did they basically had to perform admirably in the face of fierce fighting, but they also had to fight those who basically saw them as being less than human beings, who supposedly were supposed to be fighting alongside of them. And it's due to that two-front war that they were fighting, those battles, that they came back. If they were able to come back, they came back with, I think, an enlarged view of what basically democracy meant, what freedom and equality meant, and also access to opportunity meant.
I understand. Talk to us about Christian Fleetwood.
One of the most interesting individuals that I encountered in my research. He was somebody who gave himself selflessly, basically on the field of battle. He wanted to be an officer. He saw himself as a leader of men, and time and time again, when the country basically found itself moving towards an emergency in which basically arms would be taken up, he would put himself forward as being somebody to volunteer for that fight, only to be discouraged. But in the end of the day, he found himself as basically being the cadre for officers standing who would stand later on in the World War One Army. They would be the ones who would basically carry the flag forward for people like him. He's one of the most fascinating people, but he's also, I think, in that pantheon of heroes that I talk about at the end of the book. He served as a vivid example of what commitment to duty and also a commitment to freedom means, I think.
Talk to us about the National Convention of Colored Men.
The National Convention of Colored Men. Now, this, if you think about when this organization came into being, it was during a time when blacks collectively were trying to establish themselves not only as men but also as leaders within their own community. This, for them, I think, it's so much about them that we really don't know. We need to know the communities from which they emerge. We also need to know, okay, what are the things that basically motivated them to do some of the things that they would do later. I found that this period to be one in which people were saying, you know what, we're going to be recognized as as respectable, upstanding individuals, and that organization epitomized that.
All these stories were, I can say, fascinating, but I kind of stuck on William Henry Thompson.
Thompson. Somebody who, wow. All these people you're mentioning, it basically brings back a flood of memories for me.
I know it does.
He is somebody who, how do I want to describe him? He's somebody who is very, I would say he's very humble, but he's also part of this group that comes out of Paterson, New Jersey.
Right.
Who has their own ideas as to what, they have their own ideas as to what freedom means for them at the turn of the century. When they were fighting in the Spanish-American War, They were also basically carrying the flag, so to speak, but mm-hmm. they were also there realizing that many of the things that they were fighting for were not going to be able to realize them once they returned home, if they returned home. It's funny about that group is that one of the things about them is that they're right there on the cusp of the Buffalo Soldiers who were serving in the West at that time. And many of them were basically trained by those former Buffalo Soldiers. And I think they ended up basically being deeply influenced by the way that they carried themselves, both in uniform and out of uniform. And I think that, Tompkins epitomizes that.
I think I asked you this question prior to we having an interview last month. Were there any aha moments that occurred while you were researching and then, putting your thoughts on paper?
Well, for me, the thing that struck me the most was that for the World War One guys, the Henry Johnsons,
mm-hmm.
I was really surprised that they were not acknowledged at the time. And for Johnson, that he was not acknowledged as basically being a Medal of Honor recipient
right.
because of what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you remember that story, his acts in the face of battle
mm-hmm.
were legendary. In fact, his community and communities along the Eastern Seaboard would basically sing praises of what he did.
Right.
But it never reached basically the halls. It never reached the ears of policymakers
mm-hmm.
until much later on. And in fact, into the 21st century, we actually see him being accorded the recognition that he deserved. So that was, for me, that was like, that was the moment for me, because I was like, I heard stories about, Needham Roberts and Henry Johnson. I heard them from grade school. But just what happened to him after the war, and then also how the legendary whispers of what he did carried forward, and how the process through which he was basically recognized. I thought that he should have been recognized way before then. And in fact, I was kind of surprised that he wasn't recognized before then. Then the other thing, here's one more thing. For Vernon Baker,
mm-hmm.
Baker is somebody, I read his memoir before I actually started doing research on what he did during the Second World War. And this is a man who was very humble. He's very down to earth. He talked about his upbringing in a very frank and I think candid way. But what he did basically in Italy, to me, it told me what everyday people can do when they're basically faced with basically these moments of adversity. They will rise to the occasion. And Baker, I think, epitomized that. But at the end of that, and what really struck me about him was that even when he was recognized by President Clinton, he still was thinking about his comrades who basically perished during the time he was fighting. He still remembered them. And I think that basically resonates with all of them, is that they felt like they would not be who they were if not for those people that served alongside of them.
Right. Why was it important for you? You wrote the narratives of their stories in the beginning of the book, and at the back of the book, you had a synopsis of all the 89 recipients. Why was that important to include that also?
Well, the reason why I wanted to do that is because I only talked about those who whose actions basically fit the framework mm-hmm. in which I was writing.
Okay.
But I also wanted to make sure that we don't forget all 89 of these individuals, because what they did was remarkable in itself. It was phenomenal. I also wanted to make sure that I kept them together as a composite group.
Gotcha.
If we acknowledge some and fail to acknowledge the others, then we're committing the same. We're committing the same mistakes that they had done previously, that the military had done previously in acknowledging their actions.
Dr. Jefferson, what do you want readers to come away with?
Well, from this book, after reading it, I want them to understand that individuals are motivated by much more than basically, notions of visibility, publicity, and so forth. But what moves them most, I think what moves them mostly is the strength of character and also the courage of conviction. If we acknowledge that, and we acknowledge that by reading their stories, then I think we acknowledge the best parts of ourselves.
I understand. Any final comments, Dr. Jefferson?
Any comments?
Any final comments?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to thank you for having me on your program today. And I want everyone, if you get a chance to read this, to take a step back and to reflect on what it means basically to be in the society that we are in right now, and then also what's going to be required for us basically going forward in the future. That's what I want to impart to everyone who's listening to this program.
Dr. Robert F. Jefferson, Jr., Associate Professor of History at the University of New Mexico and author of Brothers in Valor, Battlefield Stories of the 89 African Americans Awarded the Medal of Honor. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at KUT.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O'Hanson, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.